If you were here last week, you know that the name Habakkuk, it's a Hebrew name, means to wrestle or to embrace. And we saw that Habakkuk was a prophet who lived in a very dark time in the nation of Judah. He saw all the problems, all the corruption, all the violence, all the injustice, all the oppression around him. He saw that God's people had turned away from God, and he had lots of questions for God as to why God would allow that to happen. So Habakkuk wrestled with God. But the beautiful thing we see as the book of Habakkuk unfolds is that ultimately, even though Habakkuk doesn't have the answers to all of the questions that he has, he embraces God. He holds on to God. He waits for God. He finds his hope, even in a really dark time, in God. Habakkuk struggled with what he saw happening around him in the nation of Judah. He struggled with the violence and the injustice, the oppression and the idolatry. He wondered why God wasn't doing anything about it. Do you ever look at things that are happening either in your own life or your family's life, or you look at things going on in the world around us and you wonder, why doesn't God do anything about it? That is Habakkuk. And then when God told him what he was going to do about it, and that was to send the Babylonians, a ruthless nation that was conquering the whole known world at the time. He was going to send the Babylonians to basically overthrow Judah, and the Babylonians would bring that punishment and that justice on Judah. And when God told Habakkuk what he was going to do, Habakkuk is like, what? He didn't understand why God would work that way. And I began to realize as I read through this and last week as I preached that there are a lot of times in our own lives, we realize there are a lot of times in our own lives when we face things where we find ourselves asking why. Now, there may be some super spiritual ones of you out there who have never asked God the question why, but I would imagine if you're even a little bit like me, there have been lots of times in your life where you've had that question. Why did my mom get Alzheimer's when she was 66 and leave this earth when she was only 71? Why did my 20-year-old cousin commit suicide when he was a sophomore in college preparing to be a missionary? I could add to that list. I could add a lot of things to that list of questions of why. Habakkuk did not understand why God was doing what he was doing. And we don't understand sometimes why certain things happen, and we wonder why God doesn't seem to be doing anything about it, maybe something very personal in our own life. And hopefully you came away last week, or you'll come away after this week, with the assurance and the certainty that in those times, we don't walk away from God. Don't walk away from God in the middle of the pain and in the middle of the questions. And there are so many people that will do that. The pain comes, the questions come, things are unresolved. And so it's like, I don't want anything more to do with this. And they walk away from God. When we hit a crisis of faith, and I think in every one of our lives, there are those moments when we have a crisis of faith. And it's in those moments we need to embrace God, even when we don't seem to know the answers and there don't seem to be any answers. I prayed for Adam and Corey this morning. Not all of you may know their story, but a number of years ago they adopted a little girl. Her name is Evelyn. She's a beautiful little girl. And they found out recently that I think it was Evelyn's mom's sister was expecting a child and wanted to put her up for adoption. So it would mean Ava's biological cousin. And they asked if Adam and Corey would want to adopt her. And they said yes. Even though that would make a huge sacrifice and a huge step for their life, they took that step. I think you brought her home from the hospital, is that correct? Yeah. And she's been with them. But several weeks into it, they found out that someone who was claiming to be the biological father wants the baby. And I won't go into the whole story and the drama, but he filed whatever he needed to file at the very last moment. So there's another 30 days that they're in this waiting period, waiting, trusting God, hoping. And in times like that, we need to embrace the fact that God is there, even though we don't see things clearly and we don't have the answers. So chapter 2 of Habakkuk begins. Now, chapter one is like, you know, Habakkuk's wrestling with all these questions, and God says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send the Babylonians. They're ruthless. They're going to overrun Judah. They're going to bring punishment. And Habakkuk is saying, wait a minute, God, these people are worse. These are worse people than the people of Judah, and you're going to use them, these evil Babylonians, to bring judgment on Judah. And chapter one basically ends with, Habakkuk's sort of hanging there. And chapters two starts with Habakkuk's determination that he is going to see what God's answer will be, and then we find God's instructions that follow that. So I'm just going to read the first three verses of chapter 2. So chapter 2 continues with Habakkuk speaking. Chapter 1 ends with Habakkuk's second complaint to God about, you know, why he's working the way he's working. And he just asked this question, you know, is this evil king, is he going to keep emptying his net and destroying all the nations? I mean, are you going to let this happen, God? I mean, that's kind of what Habakkuk ends chapter one saying. And then this is what he says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. Those are the walls of the city that looked out over the plains that would be surrounding them. I'm going to stand my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me, what God will say to me, and what answer I am to give to this complaint. In other words, what answer am I going to get to my complaint that I've just made to God? Well, I'm going to stand there on my watch, and I'm going to wait and see. And verse 2 begins God's answer. And the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. And then to verse 3, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. Listen to those words. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. So there are three things in those verses that we're going to look at in just a minute. Three things that we can learn about what to do in the midst of the unanswered questions of life that we have. And that is to listen, to write, and to wait. And I would suggest that the waiting is the hardest part. But before I get into that, let me kind of give you the context of this whole chapter, because it helps us to better understand what Habakkuk and the people of Judah were facing. And this is the context into which God speaks to Habakkuk, and this is what makes the waiting so hard. You know, it's easy to read that verse and say, well, you know, don't, even though it lingers, wait, it will certainly come. But you get into verse 4 and following in the chapter, and this is the context. This is the situation that Habakkuk is going to have to wait through. So this is still God speaking. And he's talking about Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and the Babylonians in verse 4. And I'm not going to read this verbatim. I'll read some of it and kind of capture some of it. So if you can follow along, you're welcome to do so. So God says, see, he, Nebuchadnezzar, is puffed up. His desires are not upright. And then I'm going to skip that next part because we're going to come to it later. Indeed, wine betrays him. He's arrogant. He's greedy. He's never satisfied. He gathers himself all the nations and takes captive all the people. This is the description, and this is true of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. And then it talks about those who have been captive. And ultimately, this is their condemnation of Nebuchadnezzar. Woe to him who piles up stolen goods, who makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on? Will not your debtors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their victim. Because you have plundered many nations, the people who are left will plunder you. For you have shed men's blood and have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Woe to him who builds his realm by unjust gain. And you know that if you looked at probably most of the famous dictators down through history, whether it's Hitler or Stalin or Mussolini or Mao Zedong or Pol Pot in Cambodia, the list could go on. You would see some of these characteristics, and I'll outline them for you in just a minute. So he goes on that he builds his realm with unjust gain. He sets his nets on high. He's plotted the ruin of many peoples. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by crime. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire? For the nations exhaust themselves for nothing. For the earth will be filled. I'm going to skip that one too, because that's coming later. Because right in the middle of all this woe, there's these little glimpses of hope and good news. I'm going to come back to those in a minute. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. The cup of the Lord's right hand is coming around to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. This is all about Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. The violence you have done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. You have shed men's blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. What value is an idol since a man carved it, or an image that teaches lies? Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to a lifeless stone, wake up. All of this is the context of what Habakkuk and the people of Judah were going to find themselves in when Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians overran their land. And these five woes that are pronounced in here, they're pronouncements of judgment on the Babylonians. It would be something that would come later, but here was the issue. And here was what Habakkuk would be set right smack in the middle of. Greed for conquest of others and other nations, pride in building an empire accomplished at other people's expense, self-centered injustice, violence in stripping others of their possessions and their dignity, idol worship. Those are the five woes that are pronounced on the Babylonians. And in that context, and I only go through all of that because that's the context in which Habakkuk is writing. And it's into that context that God tells Habakkuk to wait. This is the context of greed, pride, oppression, injustice, violence, idolatry. We can see a lot of that in our world today. We can see that in our own country today. And into that context, God tells Habakkuk, wait. How does that kind of trickle down to our personal lives? What do you do when you hit a spiritual wall? What do you do when you're wrestling with doubts? What do you do when you want to believe that God is good, but your life right now is not? What do you do when you feel like this thing that's happening to you or that you're going through just isn't fair? And it is true, sadly true, that when some people are hurting and they don't know what to do, they walk away from God. And the message of Habakkuk is, don't walk away from God, don't quit, wait. Any of you, when you were a kid and you wanted something and your parents told you to wait, did you like that? I don't think most kids have that word in their vocabulary. But we as adults sometimes aren't that much different. So let's go back to these three things in verses 1, 2, and 3. These three things that God tells Habakkuk, or tells us through Habakkuk. And the first one is to listen. Habakkuk says, I'll stand, in verse 1, I'll stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. In other words, Habakkuk is saying, okay, I'm going to listen. I'm going to wait and see what God shows me. I'm going to listen to him so that I will know the answer to this thing that is bothering me so much. And it's interesting that it says Habakkuk stationed himself at a strategic position to see and to hear. I will look and see what he will say to me. And I believe that in our own lives, especially when we're going through dark times or we're going through difficult times, we need to put ourselves in a place where we can listen to God. And sometimes we let ourselves become so overwhelmed, or we let ourselves get so overrun by the busyness of life that we don't put ourselves in a place where we can listen to God. Habakkuk did that. I mean, I can kind of envision this, that out on this wall, and the ramparts that protected the city, there's the prophet Habakkuk standing there, waiting to see what God would say to him. I think we have a tendency, don't we, to tell God what we want him to do. And so for us, prayer is more about us talking to God and telling him what we want him to do. And I would suggest to you maybe a little less telling God what you want him to do and a little more listening. And just because in a moment in time and in a moment of difficulty, God might seem silent, that does not mean that he is absent. And God speaks to us. He speaks to us through the Bible, through his word. He speaks to us by things that we hear or read. I think we should read other books along with the Bible. He speaks to us through what we see happening in the world around us. He speaks to us through the words of another person. And when I went back and reread this, I thought, that's kind of strange wording. Why didn't Habakkuk say, I will listen to see what he has to say to me? I mean, that, in my thinking of English grammar, that would seem like the right thing to do. I will listen for what God has to say to me. But Habakkuk says, I will look to see what he has to say to me. And I think oftentimes God speaks to us by what we see around us. I will look and see. And we see what God is doing, and we see things that are happening, and God speaks to us, not just through the reading of his word, not just through the words of some other person, not just through the thing that we read in a book, but God also speaks to us by what we see around us. And Habakkuk is saying, okay, I'm going to look, I'm going to see what God has to say to me. But implied in that is, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen to what God has to say. And sometimes when God speaks to us through his word or through the words of a friend or through something that we read or through the things that we see happening in our world around us, it's not necessarily what we want to hear. And that was the case for Habakkuk. He didn't want to hear all this. He didn't want to hear all these woes. He didn't want to be reminded of what was going to happen to his people. But listen. And if we want to really wait on God and have hope in the middle of dark times, it starts by listening. Listening to what God has to say from all these sources around us. The second thing that he said that is kind of interesting is that after Habakkuk says that he's going to listen, God says, okay, write down what you hear. That's basically what he says. Write down the revelation, make it plain on tablets, make it something that can be communicated. What I reveal to you, even though it waits for a time that's yet to come, you write it down. It's easy sometimes to forget what we hear or read, whether it's from the Bible or from a book, or from a friend, or from a sermon. And let's be honest, it's easy to forget sometimes what God has done for us in our lives. I think that our spiritual enemy who wants to destroy us wants to take away what God speaks to us. And one of the ways that we can make sure that we anchor that, because, you know, my memory is worse and worse as the years go on. But if I write something down, I have a record to go to. Write down what God says. Whether it's a promise from his word or encouragement from what someone else says to you, things that you see around us, and then you can go back and remember. God told Habakkuk, write it down. Write it down. I'm bad at that. I'm not a journaler. My dad on his bookshelf has like, I don't know, at least 50 journals, one for every year. Probably since he was in college. Every single year he filled out a journal and wrote stuff down in it. I've tried that, and I have like these nice, probably in every room in my house, there's a journal there where I intend to write things down. And I do sometimes write things down. And what I have found is this. There are times that I'll go back and read stuff that I was wrestling with 6 years ago, 10 years ago, and then it helps give perspective. Write down what God says. When you think about the Apostle Paul's life, you remember one of the things that he shared when he was writing to the church in Corinth was he said, you know, I had this thorn in my flesh, some kind of physical affliction. And three times I asked God to take that away from me, and God never did take it away from me. And then here's what Paul does. And he could have been mad. Hey, I'm an apostle. God, I've been stoned, I've been shipwrecked, I've been imprisoned, I've been beaten, I've gone through all these things for you. Couldn't you at least, you know, take away this little physical affliction? Couldn't you take this? I've been asking you, this is the third time, God, this is the third time I've asked you, I'm your apostle, why aren't you doing this for me? And instead, here's what happens. Paul writes down what God told him, and what God told him is, my grace is sufficient for you. In my strength is made perfect in your weakness. And that became Paul's testimony. He wrote it down. My grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient for you. Now, I'm going to do a show of hands. I know at least one person that'll... How many of you do any kind of a diary or journal? I knew my daughter and daughter-in-law would raise their hands. And a few others. Okay. So the rest of you are a lot like me. You don't necessarily want to write down all the stuff that's happening in your life. But I just thought this was kind of intriguing that God says to Habakkuk, listen, look and listen, and then write down what you see. Now, I mean, there's a specific purpose for this, that what Habakkuk writes down, we're reading today. So there was a purpose in that. But I think when we write down what God says to us through what we hear, what we read, what we see happening, it gives us a place where we can go back and say, okay. And I was listening to one pastor preach on this this whole topic, and he said that every year he and his wife at the beginning of the year, they go back and read through their journal from the previous year, and they can see the way that God has worked. I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm going to try to do that better because I think there's value in that because it's a reminder. All through the Old Testament, in the Psalms in particular, it's like, remember what God did. Remember how the Lord took us through the Red Sea. Remember how, you know, he gave us manna to eat in the wilderness. Remember how he took us through the desert. Remember how God did this. Remember, remember, remember. And the way we remember best is by writing it down. So let me encourage you not only to listen to what God says to you through what's happening around you, through his word, through the words of friends, through things that you read and see. Not only listen, but write down what God is saying to you, what he reveals to you. And that's what Habakkuk did, and that's why we can read that today. And then the last thing that God says to Habakkuk in that third verse says the revelation, or what truth, what I'm going to reveal that's going to happen, awaits an appointed time. In other words, this is going to be something that's going to happen down the road. It waits. It speaks of an end. It won't prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. Wait for it. And I don't have an answer to the last sentence in this verse because it seems to contradict wait. Says it will certainly come, that's good, and it will not delay. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I guess it's a matter of God's timing versus our timing. Some things are delayed, and we just keep waiting, and we keep waiting. And so God says to Habakkuk, wait. And waiting is hard. Will my child ever come back to Christ? Will my headaches ever go away? Will my spouse stop abusing me? Will my loved one be healed from their suffering? Will my child stop being bullied at school? Waiting is hard. And without trying to make this a cliche, The truth of the matter is, it's in the waiting, it's in the valleys. It's not on the mountaintop, it's in the valleys, it's in the waiting that we grow. And if we listen, and if we write down and remember what God says to us in our listening, and we wait, we grow. One sermon that I listened to this week, the pastor said, if it is not God's time, you can't force it. If it is God's time, you can't stop it. If it is not God's time, you can't force it. If it is God's time, you can't stop it. Now let's face it, we're an instant society, aren't we? Any of you have like a any kind of streaming internet-based service at home for either, you know, streaming movies or whether it's Netflix or AT&T DirecTV or Hulu or Amazon? Probably a lot of you have that. And what happens when either the service or the download is going slow? Well, you know, the one service that we had is just, hang on, we'll be with you in a minute. And there's this little circle spinning around on the screen. Anybody ever have a little circle spinning on their screen while it's buffering? And what do you, it's like, come on, I paid for this. I don't want to wait for my Netflix. I don't want to wait for this show to stop, you know, streaming. And it's like a whole, like 9 seconds, maybe. In the grand scheme of things, it's like a whole 9 seconds that I am just like, stupid internet. I don't like to wait, and I suspect most of us don't like to wait, and yet God has the audacity to say, though it lingers, wait for it, wait for it. And when things are delayed in our life that we want to happen, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's God's denials or that God's not engaged or that somehow he's not paying attention. He's just telling us, wait. But I want to end this morning by saying, here's why we can wait. And here's why we can hold on and hope. Even in the darkest times, even when we have all these questions and we don't have the answers yet, here's why we can wait. Because sandwiched right in the middle of Habakkuk chapter 2, in the midst of all of that doom and gloom and all the woes about the Babylonians and all of that junk that is just depressing. Watch our news every day. It's depressing. I mean, all the stuff that's going on in our world today. Sandwiched right in the middle of that, we find three great truths that serve as an anchor for the hope that we have. And the first one, and I intentionally didn't read them when I was skimming through that passage, and the first one is in that fourth verse. And it's almost like it's just randomly tossed in there. God's talking about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians and all the evil of the world in that day, and he says Nebuchadnezzar's puffed up, his desires are not upright. And then right in the middle of all that, he says, but the righteous will live by his faith. And when you first look at that, it's like, that seems kind of out of place, doesn't it? I mean, and then he goes on down, just like almost like he just tosses that in there, the righteous will live by his faith. And then he keeps going about Nebuchadnezzar. The wine betrays him. He's arrogant. He's never at rest. He's greedy, never satisfied, takes captives of people of other nations. And right in the middle of that, the righteous will live by faith. Why in the world is that stuck in the middle of all of these pronouncements of gloom and doom? It's because we need it. We need it when we look around our world today. We need to be reminded of the fact that we live not by what we see and what's going on or what necessarily even what we want. We live by faith that is based on the character of God and the nature of God and the goodness of God. And so the world that we live in, like it was in Nebuchadnezzar's day and like it seems in our day, the world can be going to hell in a handbasket, and we think that, and we see all of the horrible stuff that's going on in our world today, and you can look at human history, and it's been, you see the same thing generation after generation. And in the middle of all that, but the righteous will live by faith. The righteous will live by faith. Not just by what they see, but by faith in the goodness of God, in the faithfulness of God. And so that we can be people who say that even in the waiting, God, you are good. Even in the waiting in my life where things aren't happening the way I want to see them happening, you are good. The righteous will live by faith. Even though I don't see you, God, I trust you. Even if you're not doing exactly what I want you to do right now in my life, I trust you. The righteous will live by faith. The second thing is down in verse 14. And you gotta love this. In the middle of all this junk, people who build a city by bloodshed, establish a town by crime, people's hard labor just seems like fuel for the fire. I mean, it's just all of this depressing stuff, and then in the middle of that, just like randomly thrown in there again, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, and as the waters cover the sea. In the middle of all of this, in the middle of all of this stuff, we're reminded of the fact that there will come a time when God's glory fills the whole earth. What a wonderful serendipity. What a wonderful, you know, little nugget of encouragement and truth that's right in the middle of all of this bad stuff. All of this stuff that's going down that isn't what Habakkuk wants to see, and yet he's being reminded, yeah, Habakkuk, you got to live by faith and trust me, because there's coming a time when my glory is going to fill the whole earth. And so we need to be reminded, whether it's in our own personal lives or in our family life, whether it's in our work situation, whether it's in our community or our nation or the world in which we live, even when things don't look good now, there is coming a time when God will make all things right, when he will bring justice and judgment, and he will make all things new, and he will fill all of creation with the fullness of his glory. What an incredible hope that we have. That's a hope that's worth waiting for. That's a hope that's worth holding on to. That's why we live by faith. There'll come a time when God's glory fills the whole earth. And then you get down to verse 20, almost at the end of this, at the end of this chapter, talking about the idols and idolatry, and that's when you worship something. It's not necessarily a carved image, although it was and very much so in that day, but it's not just that. It's just when we worship anything in place of God, when anything becomes more important to us than God, that becomes an idol. But into all of this, all of the treachery, all of the oppression, all of the violence, all of the injustice, all of the idolatry, it's like God is reminding Habakkuk, okay, Habakkuk, I know what's going on around you. And I know that it's hard to wait until the appointed time when I come and ultimately will make all things right. But he says to Habakkuk and he says to us, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. But the Lord, those three words, those are the key words in this whole thing, in this whole mess, in this whole chaos, but the Lord is in his holy temple, in his dwelling place. In spite of everything, God is here. He's still in control. He's worthy of our worship. And I guess what struck me the most in that, especially as I've thought about some of my complaints to God in the past year or so, let all the earth be silent before him. So I read that and it's like God is saying, Paul, would you just shut up for a minute? Would you just be quiet? Would you stop whining and complaining? I think of Psalm 46, which God just says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. And so in all of our lives, we're faced with this challenge, with whatever's going on around us, when it's tough, when it's difficult, when we see a lot of junk out there in our world today that we wish wasn't there, and we struggle with why God allows that all to happen, just be still. Be silent before God. Know that he's ultimately worthy of our worship, that he's still in control, that he's still in his temple. And so I come away with this, and I hope you come away with this, and saying, yes, no matter what's happening in my life, as hard as it is to wait to see the answers to my prayer or to see things work out, I choose to trust God. And I choose to believe that God is still good, that God is still in control, no matter what, that there will come a time when he comes and his glory will fill the whole earth. And right now he's still in his temple, even though I can't visually even begin to imagine that. He's still in control. He's still worthy of our worship. Let's pray together. And as we pray, if you're struggling with something in your life and you've got a lot of questions and maybe you're angry at God and maybe you're confused and you just need to let all of that go and wait on him and listen to him and trust him, you can do that this morning. And if you want to come and kneel at these altars and pray, we want to give you space to do that. But before I close in prayer, and before we close in singing, take a couple minutes. Let God speak to you. Whatever the questions are that you're wrestling with, embrace God. Trust him. Hold on to him. Lord, in whatever's going on in our lives, we wait on you. We trust you. May we find you to be our hope and our confidence in every circumstance of life. May we walk by faith, trusting that you are a good God and that you ultimately will accomplish your purposes, and that the whole of your creation will be filled with your glory, with the knowledge of the Lord. We pray these things in your name. Amen.